Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Today, we are completing our special original investigative reporting series on vaccines are safe and effective, or are they? We're asking questions, important questions, that unfortunately the mainstream media, the majority of the scientific and medical communities, the hospital associations, major medical organizations like the American Academy of Pediatrics and Obstetrics and Gynecology and others have failed to do their homework. We're simply taking everything for granted, and we shouldn't. As I began this series, I laid out why there should be legitimate conversations, civil discourse, on proving once and for all if a vaccine that is in common use to even those mandated should be given based upon the science proving its safety and the science proving its efficacy and not the manufacturer's science, because we've already seen how these agencies that approve and recommend these vaccines, the CDC, the FDA, U.S. Public Health Service, the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease, are themselves very compromised and gross conflicts of interest. As I ended yesterday's program, I talked about the polio vaccine, and as I was mentioning at the end, neither have modern polio vaccines been proven to be safe. In 2011, Bill Gates launched a polio eradication campaign in rural India. This particular polio vaccine had an increased dosage of the polio virus. In the April-June 2012 issue of the Indian Journal of Medical Ethics, a paper reported the incidence of 47,500 new cases of what was being termed non-polio acute flaccid paralysis, or NPAFHP, following Gates' polio campaign. It did not occur before, but it did occur afterwards. The following year, there were over 53,500 reported cases of the non-polio acute flaccid paralysis, which is clinically indistinguishable from wild polio paralysis, as well as polio vaccine-induced paralysis. The primary difference is that this particular one is far more deadly. More people die. So today, I'm taking on what is considered the gold standard in the helping millions or countless individuals survive smallpox. Was the vaccine responsible? If so, what is the actual evidence? It was Edward Jenner who first popularized the vaccine program with his smallpox vaccine. A close look at history reveals that the procedure never worked. In England, a compulsory vaccination against smallpox was first introduced in 1852. Yet from 1857 to 1859, the smallpox epidemic killed 14,244 people. From 1863 to 1865, a second outbreak claimed 20,059 lives. A more stringent compulsory vaccine law was passed in 1867, and those who evaded inoculation were prosecuted, so the vast majority of the population had received their smallpox inoculation. An intensive four-year effort to vaccinate virtually all people between the ages of 2 and 50 resulted in 97.5% of the population being vaccinated. The following year, though, England experienced, after everyone was vaccinated, its worst ever smallpox epidemic. 44,840 lives were lost. Overall, from 1871 to 1880, during this period of compulsory vaccination, the death rate from smallpox leapt from 28 to 46 per 100,000. Also, if you read the text Immunization Theory versus Reality, the expose on vaccines, it recounts a different history of the smallpox vaccine that is taught in school. Quote, in 1796, Jenner came on the scene saying that when dairymaids caught cowpox, they could no longer catch smallpox. His medical colleagues disputed his claims, as the research of the times indicated numerous dairy maids and lots of individuals catching both cowpox and then coming down with smallpox. Yet Jenner persisted, and he published a treatise on this idea in 1798, and there was no peer review system at that time. He called his treatise Inquiry and became famous for it, end quote. The smallpox vaccine was given to infants in the United States until 1972. At that time, the global incidence of this disease was well under control, and routine vaccination against smallpox ended. According to the National Network for Immunization Information, it was believed then that the risk of serious adverse events from the smallpox vaccine, including death, far outweighed the risk of contracting the disease itself in the United States. The World Health Organization certified that smallpox was eradicated worldwide in 1980. After the terrorist threats of 2001, the U.S. developed a plan to reintroduce the smallpox vaccine, if necessary, to counter a potential attack using the virus as a biological weapon. In State of Immunity, author James Colgrove reports that the Bush administration announced an ambitious plan in 2002 to vaccinate emergency personnel, all healthcare workers, and adults in the general population on a voluntary basis. The administration failed to win the support of the program from healthcare providers. However, in less than a year later, the smallpox vaccination plan was ceased. Approximately 39,000 civilian healthcare workers and public health advocates received the smallpox vaccine in 2003. The modern smallpox vaccine does not contain the smallpox virus itself, but rather a virus called Vaccinia, whose origins are unknown. The CDC states, quote, "The Vaccinia virus is the live virus used in the smallpox vaccine. It is a pox-type virus related to smallpox. When given to humans as a vaccine, it helps the body develop immunity to smallpox. The smallpox vaccine does not contain the smallpox virus, and it cannot cause smallpox," end quote. The University of Florida College of Medicine information page adds this, quote, "Vaccinia is the virus that was used for vaccination against smallpox. Its exact origin is unknown. However, as it does not appear to be related to any other known pox virus, some people think that it is a recombinant of smallpox and cowpox, while others think it may be a derivative of horsepox, a virus that no longer exists, if it ever did," end quote. The CDC reports that while the smallpox vaccine is safe for most people, serious and life-threatening reactions do occur in rare cases. Serious reactions include a rash or outbreak of sores in one area of the body. The virus may be spread from the vaccination to other sites on the body and other people. It's easily shed. A widespread vaccinia rash that occurs when the virus spreads from the vaccination site through the bloodstream and a toxic or allergic reaction to the vaccine can occur. Life-threatening reactions to the smallpox vaccine, including eczema vaccinium, a serious rash involving widespread infection of the skin in people with a condition of eczema or atopic dermatitis. Progressive vaccinemia, an infection of the skin with tissue destruction that often leads, unfortunately, to death. And post-vaccinial encephalitis, which is, of course, inflammation of your brain. But we were not taught any of this. We were never informed of any of this when a person was getting the vaccine. Another potential complication of the smallpox vaccine is a myopericarditis, or an inflammation of your heart. The CDC says that while the link between smallpox vaccine and this condition is not proven, data from recent smallpox vaccination are, quote, "consistent with a causal association," end quote, between the two. In 2005, the FDA added a new black box warning to Dryvax, the smallpox vaccine produced by Wyeth, regarding the increased risk of cardiac problems experienced by some recipients of the smallpox vaccine. What might be the consequences of mass smallpox vaccination? Well, that was the question addressed in a 2002 article. Using historical data on adverse reactions to the vaccine, the authors estimated that after excluding high-risk people and their close contacts, a vaccination strategy targeting people 1 to 29 years old would result in approximately 1,600 serious adverse events and 190 deaths. Vaccination of people from 1 to 65 years old would result in approximately 4,600 adverse events and 285 deaths. The researchers noted that the smallpox vaccine, quote, has a higher complication rate than any other vaccine currently being used, end quote. They conclude that a mass vaccination campaign would have to be careful to exclude high-risk people and their contacts to minimize complications. However, I can find no proof whatsoever that a precautionary notion was in place. First, do no harm. Exclude anyone who may be at risk of that harm. To the contrary, full steam ahead. Everybody get vaccinated. In a 2006 paper, researchers estimated the expected frequency of post-vaccinal encephalitis and death from smallpox vaccines containing two different strains of the vaccinia virus, the New York City Board of Health strain and the Lister strain. They noted that other studies of the consequences of smallpox vaccination commonly have used an incidence of approximately one death per million vaccinations. However, these analyses, quote, may give serious underestimates of the number of deaths resulting from vaccination, end quote. This study estimates that vaccination with these strains stockpiled in countries such as the United States would lead to an average of 1.4 deaths per million vaccinations. Vaccination with the Lister strain would have 8.4 deaths per million. But here's the problem. This is based upon how accurate the vaccine adverse reactions were to the virus system. And we know that only about 1% to 2% of complications and death is all that's reported. So what if we magnified that by 99%? Then it's more accurate. So all this time, there has been no accurate information about how many people would die or be paralyzed from the vaccine. Let's now examine measles. Dr. William Thompson was a former Merck scientist who became a senior epidemiologist at the CDC's Immunization Safety Department in 1997. He is listed as an author or co-author on the studies that are most often used to debunk the connection between autism and vaccines. They don't exist, according to the CDC. There are no studies. Thompson et al., 2007, and a lot of others at the CDC stated this. In 2014, after a conflict of conscience, Dr. Thompson came forth with material evidence proving that the CDC had known for almost 15 years that a causal relationship exists between the MMR vaccine, the vaccine preservative thimerosal, which is still included in the flu vaccine administered to pregnant women and children, and autism. He proved the link that they had been denying. This information was shared during numerous taped conversations with molecular biologist Professor Brian Hooker, who in the past had testified before Congress and has diligently attempted to get the CDC scientific data through repeated Freedom of Information Acts. In addition, Dr. Thompson turned over 10,000 copied pages he privately retained of research documents, statistical data, meeting notes, internal CDC emails, and correspondence to Congressman Bill Posey under legal whistleblower protection. He admitted that many of the most damning documents and data records were destroyed in his presence by his colleagues to assure that no one ever saw the truth. No government agency, the Justice Department, members of Congress would ever see what the documents stated. At the time, he agreed to testify under oath and confess all of these crimes including his own personal participation of the CDC's frauds and lies before Congress. What happened, however, was Congress, including the House Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, the Senate head, Chuck Schumer, committee heads, did not allow this testimony to occur, did not allow a hearing to occur. A New York Times article identified Thompson as a, quote, former center employee. Since it has become standard protocol at the Times to get its facts wrong, Thompson, in fact, remains at the CDC. He still works there. Following his blowing the whistle, he was put on administrative leave of absence, chastised for breaching CDC protocol, and threatened with termination. While on leave, Thompson shopped around for a university position. And during a recent Progressive Radio Network conversation with Professor Hooker, he believes the CDC realized Thompson was far more dangerous outside the immunization safety office. He would have had more freedom to further expose the CDC's obstruction of justice, destroying all the documents that showed there was absolutely, positively, irrefutably a connection between vaccinations with the MMR vaccine of a 325% increase in autism spectrum disorder in African-American young children, mainly males, 36 months and younger. The proof was there. They brought black garbage bags into the office and destroyed every document. That should have been extremely serious and been taken to court. It was not. Not a single hearing was held. He was never interviewed officially by any member of government. The pharmaceutical industry would also suffer dramatically if the media had reported on the urgently important story that the documentary Vaxxed recounts. There would be nationwide public outrage and vaccine rates would likely plummet. Consequently, the CDC retained and awarded Thompson with a $24,000 retention bonus and promotion. Today, he remains silent somewhere within the CDC's halls. Professor Hooker is also familiar with censorship and has personally encountered CDC vengeance. In 2014, he submitted a research paper based upon the CDC data provided by Dr. Thompson, all CDC and their own studies. And he published this in the peer-reviewed journal Translational Neurodegeneration. Using the CDC's, again, own research, the paper shows a 350% increase of autism among African-American boys who received the MMR vaccine according to the national vaccine schedule compared to boys who received it after 3 years of age. The journal approved it for publication but immediately confronted CDC demands for its removal. Hooker's paper was suspended and never published due to fabricated claims of a conflict of interest. But then you have a story that you probably are not familiar with. You may never have heard of Dr. Poul Thorsen. He's a Danish scientist who co-authored 36 CDC studies, two of which are widely cited to disprove any autism vaccine link. From 2004 to 2010, Thorsen laundered over $1 million in federal grant money allocated for research. The studies regarding the MMR and thimerosal studies have now been thoroughly debunked after independent analysis and representing a classic case of scientific fraud. Thorsen is currently a fugitive. Attempts by the Department of Justice and FBI to extradite him have been continuously thwarted by the CDC, and Thorsen continues to walk openly as a free man. In 2016, the CDC blocked testimony by Dr. Thompson in a medical malpractice case so he could not tell his story on behalf of vaccine-injured, now autistic boy named Yates Hazelhurst. Let's look at the randomized placebo-controlled trial. How did it happen that drugs that routinely cause injuries are considered the gold standard of medicine in caring for us, our aging parents, our grandparents, and our children? How did these drugs make it into the market in the first place? It's all about the study design. And who controls the study design? The manufacturer. On its website, the FDA assures the public, quote, vaccines, as with all products regulated by the FDA, undergo a rigorous review of laboratory and clinical data to ensure the safety, efficacy, and purity and potency of these products, end quote. However, not a single one of these pharmaceutical companies, including Merck's vaccines, has ever been tested in a scientifically viable double-blind placebo-controlled trial where the placebo in the control group is not inert, such as the use of sterile saline, which should be used. Rather, Merck only tested its vaccines with the viral component against a faux placebo containing the same ingredients, including aluminum, but minus the virus. Known as a carrier solution, the standard scientific protocol does not designate it as a proper placebo for measuring the efficacy and disease risk of a drug. And in the case of Gardasil, the trial was statistically trickery as an outcome to mask Gardasil's adverse effects. One placebo group received the company's proprietary adjuvant, amorphous aluminum hydroxyphosphate sulfate, a known neurotoxin. Then you have to ask a simple question. Is it legitimate to use a known, highly neurotoxic ingredient that is replete in the references in the peer-reviewed literature on the dangers of this toxin? Look at the data, and it's there. And in the case of Gardasil, the trial was statistical trickery to mask Gardasil's adverse effects. One placebo group received the company's proprietary adjunct amorphous aluminum hydroxyphosphate sulfate. What is that? Just go to the peer-reviewed toxicological literature. It's a known neurotoxin, a very serious neurotoxin. It should never be put into anyone's body. The adjuvant has yet to be properly tested for safety. One of the more serious risks of aluminum adjuvants is the triggering of an extreme autoimmune response. What Israeli immunologist Yehuda Schoenfeld has called, quote, autoimmune inflammatory syndrome induced by adjuvants, end quote. Now, any toxicologist could find this. Any epidemiologist, any virologist could find this information if they chose to and looked in the scientific literature. It is not hidden. In the Cochrane Database Collaboration 2016 analysis of Merck's Gardasil, and mind you, the Cochrane Group is considered the most respected gold standard for scientific integrity in the world. The investigators were so alarmed, they filed a complaint against the European Medical Agency for failing to adequately assess the vaccine's neurological harms. More recently, a meta-analysis published in Systemic Reviews Journal concluded, quote, HPV, that's human papillomavirus, vaccines increase serious nervous system disorders and general harms, end quote. So did you hear any of the proponents of mass vaccination, any of the celebrities, any of the media, anyone from the CDC, the FDA, anyone at all saying, let's stop for a moment. Let's take a look at the safety concerns of this vaccine. No, to the contrary. Major public relations campaigns scare the people into getting the vaccine. Now, for those of us who have been enthralled with the narrative that vaccines are one of the foundational aspects of good health, then this information is meant to introduce you to the idea that there is more, a great deal more, to the picture than has been presented to us. Just as the success story of the life-saving COVID vaccines that was hypnotically promoted by the medical establishment and the captured media isn't exactly the whole story, is it? Now that we can look back and we can see that virtually every single one of the protocols advocated was unscientific, unfounded, and just the opposite of what we were told, causing massive suffering, unnecessary death, permanent injury, and other adverse effects that will be counting into the next 10 years. The information we've presented is just a fraction of all the information that exists on this subject. I have put thousands upon thousands upon thousands of hours in reviewing all the literature, pro and con, and then seeing how much of the pro-literature that's out there is really pro-propaganda based on flawed science. And unfortunately, none of the literature is taking into account people's individual testimonials, legal records, and peer-reviewed publications that have had to withdraw articles because of fraud. Also, there is more to the story than can be told in the three parts that I am doing. It requires deep research to understand the history of hubris, crime, and cover-up. But more than that, it takes an open mind and the desire to know the truth. Are we a society of scientists, physicians, journalists at this moment, or the public at large? Do we seek the truth, and to what degree? Are we complacent? Are we comfortable with whatever we're told as being all that we need to know? Are we frightened into making decisions about our freedom of choice that are imbalanced and will only have a negative outcome? These qualities are fundamental to any learning, to the development of any enlightened point of view. This is what many of us have found lacking in the people we know and love, but with whom we were not able to communicate about what we saw, what the proof was. They refused and rejected the proof. After doing a long series of articles, fully documented, real scholarship, all I received was hate mail from members of Pacifica, their local board, saying, "We believe in Fauci. That's your right." And as I've said from the beginning, I will never tell you to get a vaccine or not. That's your right to make that choice. And I will respect your freedom of choice. All I ask is do the homework that you need to do, because you're turning over the potential of life, either life-saving or life-destroying, to strangers. You don't know their motives. You don't know their conflicts of interest. You don't know their biases. You don't know their ideological reference points. Try to find out more. What if we had had all those warnings from those who have spoken out since at the beginning? If we can be truthful with ourselves about what we do and do not know, if we have, over the last 3.5 years, gained an open mind and desire to know the truth, let us look honestly at the research underlying all vaccines and correct our course according to what we find. I would like to hear Robert Kennedy, who is pro-vaccine, supporting all vaccines, except for possibly Gardasil, but that's because he had a legal interest. He was fighting in a class action against the manufacturer. You could say, well, that's because as a lawyer, he's going to get a percentage of that. True or not, I could erase that and say then that supports bias. But when you promote all vaccines and brag about it, as many scientists do, including those who were later getting the COVID vaccine only to find out that virtually all the information they've been told about its safety and efficacy was wrong, and then speak the truth and be denied any platform in America or the world, except alternative platforms, and then have disinformation agencies that only supported the orthodox point of view, the government, the scientists, the manufacturers, the journalists. And so therefore, no matter where you went, you were shamed, you were ridiculed by this new sense of scientific wokeism. So I'm going to play you a few clips now about what I see as dangers of mindset that we have been so propagandized into believing authority that even when we can prove without doubt that the authority is misguided, wrong, whether intentional or not, even well-intentioned and still wrong, doesn't make any less wrong, that we're incapable of doing that today. To the contrary, on any topic, if you choose to have a different point of view, you do not have a civil discourse where people are allowed to share their points of view and let the audience decide, do I want to believe any of this, part of this, none of this? And we don't have that any longer. No matter what the topic, we have been captured at every level by groupthink and then codified into laws. The most draconian law in the world today on this topic of free speech is in Ireland, and we'll be discussing that on an upcoming program. But I'm going to play you some clips now, clips you have not heard. We're going to take a break and come back. And this is just to remind you that there are those in our midst who are not willing to surrender truth to fear, to propaganda, to wokeism, to identity politics. These are people who still look wherever they have to and say what they need to hopefully remind us, open your eyes and your ears, your conscience and your mind. Don't be self-righteous. Don't be arrogant. Don't be narcissistic, especially when you're wrong. And right now, most people and almost the entire scientific and medical community and virtually all of Congress, with few exceptions, have been wrong. And it's caused massive death and suffering. But I'm asking, how much previous death and suffering has accumulated based upon our unwillingness to look for the truth if it challenged us and made us go through the discomfort of sitting for hours at a time reading the actual independent scientific literature? And no one has done that as a group. If they had, we'd have a different outcome. Back in a moment with some important contributors to challenge our thought process. Welcome back, everyone. Today is part three in the conclusion of the in-depth original investigative report using only peer-reviewed scientific literature from independent sources published on National Library of Medicine to challenge the safety and efficacy of different vaccines. We've been told that every vaccine that is in common use is both safe and effective. There are no caveats. You might have some minor irritation at the site, but not to worry. And there's absolutely no evidence of connection between any vaccine and autism spectrum disorder. Is that true? Well, I've been deconstructing their arguments and showing none of it is true. But why didn't they find this? Why did they stay intentionally misinformed? Why are they embracing the culture of wokeism so they do not have to have the debates and open discussions in a civil manner? I'm going to play a series of clips now, the first starting with a real intellect, the type that you would have seen debating William F. Buckley, a historical liberal at The Guardian in Great Britain. And this is about truth is a right-wing construct. Is it? No. It's considered that if you're going to come down on the side of truth, and if that opposes the existing paradigm of, let's say, a Democrat or liberal belief system, then it's just right-wing radicalism. Why do they have to politicize and then weaponize the words? Why can't they just look for the facts? What is the truth? Set aside your politics. What is the truth of something? We're not there yet, but we're not even having the type of an intellectual discourse by people who are capable of knowing the truth. And this is her saying this. And this would apply to every single argument, every single argument. The Democrats and the liberal community that has been captured by the corporate interest, the neocons, will tell you that nuclear is safe and inexpensive. It's clean. Well, sorry, I've looked at the facts. I've demonstrated, held demonstrations and against nuclear power. I've written many articles on it. I did a multi-award-winning documentary, Knocking on the Devil's Door, A Deadly Nuclear Legacy. And why is it that the vast majority of people have not joined the fight? Because they've been led to believe by propaganda that nuclear is clean. It is not. But we can't have that dialogue today. Even to have the dialogue, you'll be called some names. They'll try to erase you. So it's not just on COVID or vaccines. It's on any topic that you disagree with the establishment that they're going to come after you. How did we get to this place in so fast a time? Let's hear what Melanie Phillips has to say on this.
Truth has become a right-wing concept. You cannot say it, because if you say it, you are considered right-wing. And to be right-wing is to be in league with the forces of evil. It is a Manichaean division between ideologies of one kind or another and those who don't subscribe to those ideologies. And the ideologies brook no dissent. because they represent, in the minds of people who promote them, they represent goodness, brotherhood of man, progress, reason, education. And anyone who opposes them is against all good things. So they are not just wrong, they're not people to be argued with, they're people to be removed and silenced, because otherwise you're against all good things. So it's that division between good and evil. And unfortunately, you know, if you stand up against an ideology like, I don't know, so-called anti-racism, which basically says all white people are bad.
Critical theory.
Or you stand up and say a woman is defined by her biology. So you're against transgender. So, as you know, there's no discussion. You are cancelled. You are removed. You have to be silenced. This dissent cannot be permitted. So we're in what a thinker of a previous age called cultural totalitarianism. No alternative is to be permitted. Now, first of all, that is an assault on individual freedom, freedom of expression and freedom. But it's also a complete repudiation of reason. Because if you say there is nothing that you can say that can dissent from my ideology, and you say you're bringing evidence to oppose me, well, that cannot be the case. If you're denying evidence and reality and thinking and engagement with an idea, then you're denying reason itself. And so the irony is that in an age of supposed reason, we're so rational that we've dispensed with religion. Only idiots have any kind of religious sense because it's not based on reason. That's the thinking. So we're so rational we've got rid of religion, and yet we are repudiating rationality completely. This is something that doesn't quite add up. So I would say that we are in a new age of unreason. That's what we're in. An age of unreason. That's what we've unleashed. And it's an irony because we've done it under the aegis of being rational. But in getting rid of religion, we have unleashed an age of unreason. And what follows from that is the erosion of freedom, freedom to think, freedom to speak, freedom to act, and a complete confusion about where the limit should be drawn between what I want and what others need, my duty to others and my wish to realize my own potential. In other words, you know, it's I versus we, and all those things. And the confusion is epic. But that's where we are. But again, we have no cultural leaders, religious, political, whatever, standing up saying this. And I'm sure, I mean, I may be naive, but I'm pretty sure that what I'm saying may not be thought about in these terms by many people. But I'm pretty sure that if enough leaders got up and, or if leaders got up and said this, it would start striking chords, because people, you know, people need to live in a society which is civilized, which looks after the welfare of others rather than yourself. We all know this. We all know this. But we've kind of allowed ourselves collectively to ignore it and push it to one side. It requires leadership. We don't have it. That's the problem.
I'm interested in your response, because now we're going to show you one really pernicious part of wokeism, that no matter how wrong you are, there's never an apology. There is never a, oh, I'm glad you shared different information. It shows that I overspoke or misspoke or I was wrong, and to some degree. Never. To the contrary, those who have been wrong now pride themselves in their arrogance, in their self-righteous indignation against the truth. Here's Bill Maher talking about nobody gets canceled for being too woke.
Nobody ever gets canceled for being too woke. So you can say the craziest thing, like men can have babies, and then nobody will, even though people are thinking, well, that's kind of nuts, nobody will say it. They'll just fall in line. Yeah, exactly. That's what I've always thought. Men can have babies. Sure. I saw a dude who was glowing yesterday. You know, I mean, it's, and that's the problem.
And it's totally insane.
Cowardice.
Yes, it is. It's moral cowardice, isn't it?
But intellectual cowardice.
But it also comes from a place of reality, that fear, because they see people around them literally getting cancelled, getting shamed and abused and hounded out of jobs. And they think, I don't want it to happen to me.
Now, let me share an example of exactly what he's saying. Here's a very woke vegan debating with a Australian farmer. Now, if you watch the whole debate, you'll see that the vegan is wrong on every single point, and the farmer just deconstructs it and calls her out. Well, do you remember when I was saying Greta Thunberg is not going to change anything? There's a whole campaign by individuals behind her, and it worked. Made her a famous person, very wealthy person, certainly helped her parents and others. But did it change anything? And the answer is no. Because the answer was not change our mind, change how we look at life and our place in polluting it, but rather go solar, go wind. The two things you should not do. Why? Because the energy it takes to take these precious minerals out of the ground, process them, and then put them into solar or wind doesn't equate the damage that's been done in the production of CO2. That's why I've been against electric cars. Now, if the science comes to a point where they can have solar where it's not polluting and wind without the blades, so it doesn't destroy millions of birds, cause pollution and cannot be biodegraded, then I would support it. So there are true environmentalists who know what they're talking about, and then there's the faux environmentalist. Whatever their agenda may be, they're not correct. But can we even have this dialogue? Here's just one quick example of why that person will not be called out for being wrong. Listen, it's just a second.
The largest Holocaust in history, with 3 trillion individuals brutally murdered every year.
Here is what the problem is. The person made a substantial mistake, claiming that there are 3 trillion people who die each year and then tying that into commercial farming. Well, we don't have 3 trillion people on the entire planet. We have about 8 billion people. So a person should correct themselves. But then what the farmer was saying is virtually every argument she was making was wrong. Now, I have no friends who are vegan. I'm the only vegan that I know. However, I've never once made an argument in support of veganism when I'm sharing a meal with someone. They want to eat whatever they want. That's their business. And one of the reasons that I stayed away from animal rights groups and vegan groups and health groups is because I see the self-righteous indignation, the hate and contempt they hold towards people who do not follow their lifestyle, their beliefs, their ideology. And so I just decided I'll just go about my own life, living it, and let other people live their lives and then share what we can outside of being a vegan or meat eater. Unfortunately, the woke people won't allow that. They believe there's only one truth, their truth, one belief, their belief. And if you're not with it, you're the enemy. This black and white way of looking at life. And that's where we're at this moment, in everything. Now let's go to another clip. And this is that the radical left needs... they need cancel culture, and I believe that the government and the industry has aligned itself with cancel culture because if we have reasoned, good science to argue that a particular thing that we're consuming or using is bad for the environment, bad for us, and they have no platform. Corporations don't want the good people who have the truth to debate. They're going to send some spokesperson, some hired flack who has the degrees and pedigree from Yale or Harvard, but the argument would be lost. Put anyone anyone against Anthony Fauci, and Fauci would lose, anyone such as a Dr. Cole, but also Dr. Humphreys. I know at least 100 doctors and scientists that if Anthony Fauci debated them, the whole world would say, what? Just imagine if we had a society that allowed civil discourse of people with differing points of view. We didn't call everyone names. We didn't call them racist or misogynist or whatever term someone wants to use at that moment, when someone else may have the truth and we do not. We have an ideology. We have a belief. We have a feeling we're right, but we have no proof we're right. And others have proof, but they've been denied all forms. Instead, there's been a constant attack by government, by industry, by ideological agencies, by think tanks, because they're all sharing the same lie, benefiting from the same lie. Dr. Kary Mullis, who won the Nobel Prize for discovering PCR, polymerase chain reaction test, said don't use this beyond 13 repetition cycles. They were using 41 to 44 cycles. That means every single person in America and the world who got that test had a false positive outcome. Therefore, they were called a case. They weren't. It was all lies. But when did Kary Mullis have a chance to debate? When I interviewed him for an hour and 54 minutes, he said that the president of the University of South Carolina was going to have a debate between Mullis and Anthony Fauci. Fauci declined to debate. What we're not seeing on any of the media is we're not seeing people who hold a different point of view, because you could have 10 people all holding the same point of view, so you don't have a real difference. And the media has controlled all of it, and that's unfortunate. Now let's hear from one person who has something to say about how the radical left needs woke culture, and as a result, the politicians, industry, need the cancel culture. That's where there's this alignment.
A lot of these narratives, whether it's intersectionality or these structures of oppression, all this stuff, they don't actually have any logical or reasonable underpinning. And so the only way you can defend them, the only way you can defend them, is by shutting down people who don't agree with you. Because if you have a reasonable, rational argument, their views crumble like a house of cards.
And finally, this clip. If you want to watch this, and I hope you're watching this, just go to prn.live, then go scroll down to Gary and All show notes, and you can watch this, because it's visual. But in case you're not going to have that, you're listening over a telephone or over a computer but don't know how to get to the Gary and All show notes, this is a old woman, probably in 90s, and here's a young skinhead tattooed guy, and he is yelling at her. So she talks back to him. And at the very end, when she says, you know, you pride yourself in your tattoos and you're bald-headed. And then she raises up her arm and pulls back her sleeve. And she shows her numbers, her tattoo from the Germans, from Auschwitz, and how they all had to have their head shaved. And she says, and you still don't understand. And that's where we're at today. People pride themselves in their ignorance. They defy all decency, ethics, morals. We're at the end stage of not all by any means, but probably around 40% of the American population engaging in. So where does this bring us? It brings us to a reality that I had never seen in my life. And that is that we no longer have a search for universal truths. That if I care about my daughter, I have to care about all daughters. If I care about that poor person that I know, I have to care about all people who are poor to share the gifts that we have. Not just big cars, big planes, big homes that are mine and not yours. The exclusion of people by class rather than race. Because when was the last time you saw people of all races and ethnicities and religious beliefs share their gifts I can see where two people bought a $200 million home for themselves where they already have a whole fleet of homes. $200 million, you could have recovered an entire block in a ghetto city, brought back a quality of life. You could have brought back things that people need, like a community farmer's garden, a kitchen with healthy food served from early morning to late at night for those who would not have another place to get a healthy, decent meal. You could have done so much with your money and your fame if you decided to use that money and fame and power to help others. But we've lost the sense of us, we. We've lost the sense of all the work, all of the advancements we've made in understanding the human condition. Today, people look at the world as a terrible, ugly place. I look at the world as a place that has been at different times in different locations by different people, ugly. But I also see beauty. I see transformation. I see people working together, living together, cooperating together, loving together. I see the world from abundance. Most people see it from scarcity. And so today, we live with individual truths. My house, my daughter, I don't care about yours. My bank account, I don't care if you're poor or not. It's your fault. Instead of, what can we do to help everyone? We're not there. In fact, we're so decadent, at least 40% of the American population, that there's no longer room anywhere for civil conversation, to share our opinions without fear of being canceled, ridiculed, mocked, and torn apart. I've seen so many great people, noble people, who were part of the establishment, who promoted the issues that I would take a difference from. I would share a different opinion. But now they are themselves being destroyed. That's why I've allowed them a forum. So that's where we're at. And where did all this come from? Look back. Propaganda. Everything is propaganda. And the people in control of the world know it.
Shouldn't even be driving. You into my car, you stupid old. What you done?
People who swear have no imagination.
Hey, shut up, all right? Shut your mouth.
I know you. You're just a bully. Yeah? I have known plenty of bullies, and I am not scared of you.
Would you shut up?
Look at you, with all your big muscles, eh? You've never done a hard day's work in your life, have you? You're just like a silly boy with all your tattoos and your shaved head. Why would you want to look like that? That is from Auschwitz. A shaved head and tattoo were nothing to be proud of there. But you wouldn't know anything about that. You don't care about other people. You're too selfish and ignorant.
That's all the time we have for today. Thank you all for listening, and hopefully you'll share this information in the last three shows with other people who you'd like to hopefully inspire to open their minds and see a universal truth. Not a political truth, not an ideological truth, not a financial truth, just the truth. Have a nice day.